Hello, Unas, and welcome to the Una Series podcast. My name is Katie Miller, and I am the co-founder of Una Series. I am thrilled to be here today with Allison Heltzel. We are going to dive a little bit deeper into who she is and why she is one of our biggest inspirations on this Founder Series podcast. We have a lineup of incredible, dynamic movers and shakers, female founders who we have brought into this space to not only inspire you, but to also create a little bit of interest and to pique your curiosity into why they got started, how they got started, and how they continue to press play and move forward day in and day out. Allison, thank you so much for coming. I want to pass the mic over to you. I would love for you to share with all of our viewers who the lovely Allison is and what it is that you do.
Thank you so much, Katie. I'm thrilled to be a part of this. I've been following Una since you launched and really you even before. So thank you for inviting me to share my story. So as you know, I'm originally from Texas, born and raised in Texas. And I moved to Italy almost 21 years ago. I came to Italy right after graduate school. I actually studied something completely outside of the fashion world. I was a musician and studied arts administration. And I came to Italy to do an internship at the Bologna Opera House. So I came here for one reason, and then just destiny and other things led me to the crazy world of fashion. I was always sort of mesmerized by fashion. My grandmother sort of was an amateur seamstress and would take me to the fabric store and let me pick out fabrics and patterns, and I could sort of tweak them and design them how I wanted, and she would create really anything I wanted. So I had an opportunity to work with a designer, sort of as her assistant, and I thought, well, I'm here in Italy, and that sounds like a dream. So I started working with her, and really that led me down the line of what we call product development for fashion. So working directly with the pattern makers, with the factories, with the tanneries, sourcing materials. And I've been doing that for about a little over 15 years, working with major brands such as Stuart Weitzman, Alfred Dunhill. And then in 2014, I had an idea to launch my own line, something really artisan and building on these relationships with the factories and the tanneries that I had gotten to know so well over the years. And I originally I wanted to create something very classic and timeless. So that's sort of, I made a few styles. I actually got into Trannoi, which is a fashion fair, really well known in Paris, my first season. And then I had orders from stores. So it really took off. And I was still consulting for other brands at the time. And I started building up from there. So it's been a journey as my brand, which I called Officina del Poggio. We call it ODP for short. Officina means workshop, and del Poggio means of the hill. And that name actually comes from the place I live right outside in the hills of Bologna, because we live in Via del Poggio. And I wanted to give it a name that really was authentic, because a lot of times Italian brands come up with, or even non-Italian brands want to sound Italian. But I really wanted something, Officina is very like manual, like a workshop. So I definitely know I wanted the name Officina. And then one day I going home, I saw Del Poggio and I thought, that's exactly the name I want to give it. So it became Officina del Poggio and ODP for short.
I love this. And your grandmother, she was obviously a big part of your inspiration in kickstarting this from the beginning in the early days when you started working with her. I mean, how did that transition? Did she get to be a part of any of your design?
No, unfortunately, she had Alzheimer's and she passed away. She knew I was working in fashion, but she didn't see my line develop. But I know she's looking over it now, so she's still with me and definitely as part of the inspiration. And really, my other grandmother too was made beautiful quilts, and so I did come from a creative family. I think that from both sides. Even just being a musician, it teaches you a lot of different things about discipline and working on your own and keeping pushing things forward, finding new ways. Yeah.
I want to talk about the timing from when you jumped in from working with, big brands and big fashion houses to jump into doing something on your own. Was that very clear? Was it very clean? What was that transition like? Did you continue to work with the big brands while you were building your own?
Yes, I did for the first 2 years of the brand. I was even a little bit after, I was working almost full time for other brands. And that was hard because I was trying to balance the two. At the beginning, it did kind of go hand in hand because, of course, I learn a lot working with the big brands about the other aspects of the business. So marketing, press, how it works with press, it was around the time when Instagram and influencers started becoming more important. So I was also seeing how that integrated into the business as well. But unfortunately, at some point, I really had to make the decision, okay, do I want to take this to the next level? And at that point, I had to leave behind the working with the other brands just because of time constraints, et cetera. And I think I did at the right point. I really started to focus on it. And that helped grow the brand to where, I guess from a visibility point of view, I wanted it. We got into Barney's, to Rinascente in Milan, to Moda Burundi, which I was really happy with. But in hindsight, I think it started taking the brand away from where I originally envisioned it. Because when you start following the fashion calendar and having to present season after season after season, it suddenly was no longer what I wanted the brand to be anymore. I was trying to produce new collections each season. I was with a lot of leftover materials. It just wasn't really what I had first thought the brand should be. And so really right before COVID, I started to pull the brand back a little bit. Which coincided, unfortunately, also with Barney's going bankrupt and some financial constraints that put on the business. So I started pulling the brand back and thinking, okay, no, I want this to be something that's special and something that is a little more artisan and continuative. So not something that you buy and you throw away after one season, but something you really, know is well made and you can carry from season after season.
1,000%. And I love your pieces because I feel so now knowing your brand, and I did, kind of fall into learning about you through the COVID phase. And I think, that was when your brand was truly flourishing. You're such a pioneer of sustainability and fabrics and artisans and, your local designers. Tell everybody a little bit more about that process, because I want to just stop for a second because it amazes me, how I start to read your descriptions about your products. And sometimes it's so quiet. You don't really shout out from the rooftops how much effort and work goes into this conscious building of these pieces. So shout out about it right now from your little hilltop and tell us what is happening.
So I work with some small factories, some that are a little bit larger, and they're so special. And I think also COVID, I think before COVID, I wanted to seem bigger than I was. And so, of course, maybe didn't show as much behind the scenes. I didn't show much maybe my personal life or the personal part behind the business. But yet during COVID, we were in Italy and things were shutting down a lot before everyone else. So a lot of our customers and people on Instagram were suddenly reaching out saying, how are you? How are things going? What's going on? And so I really took it as a time to start showing the more personal side and the more, even behind some of our artisans. So I had, we work with one factory right outside of Florence, and it's a small family-run factory. Massimo is now the owner. He took over it from his father, Renzo, and his mother also worked in the factory. He's the coolest guy. He windsurfs. I love to give him any sort of challenge because I know he'll come up with a resolution for it. His wife also works in the factory, and so they were having we were texting back and forth, and he was showing me how they were doing this great barbecue out in their yard during COVID. And so I said, "Can I publish these on Instagram?" And everybody loved seeing the behind the scenes, not only of us, but of also our factories. And behind these bags are actual people that, you know, Massimo loves to windsurf, and they have their own, you know, stories behind them as well. He also brought on a pattern maker that is a woman. She was an engineer, and she decided she wanted to become a pattern maker, went back to school, and it's really she said she loves it because it's a male dominated world, leather goods industry. And she said that she wanted to do it because she said she wanted to bring more women into it, and she knows she can contribute well being a woman, especially making the patterns of the bags, because she actually uses them. So those are some of the stories that I love to share. Even when we, right after COVID, we launched our shoe collection, which originally footwear, when I was rolling into the whole idea of, you know, larger distributions, etc., I had the idea of launching shoes, but of course you need to invest in size runs, and it becomes a whole different animal. Instead, we launched with shoes made to order, and we work with a very small family run, again, factory right outside of Bologna. The founder is Enzo Bonafè. He's 83 years old, and he still cuts the leather, works in the factory. His wife also works in the factory. She makes the patterns. His son and daughter have taken over. They now sort of run the business, Silvia and Massimo. And I met them, as I had taken in the past a client that was interested in making shoes. So again, that's why sometimes it's good to have the consultancies, because it forces me to reach out into other areas. And we made one shoe design that we decided to launch during Fashion Week, right after COVID. And it ended up being such a success. I didn't realize people would be so eager and willing to purchase a shoe that they had to wait 6 weeks to receive and they could never try on. Of course, we do allow returns. But we really showed how well these shoes are made, because they're made using the same techniques that menswear shoes use. So stitching the sole onto the upper rather than it just being glued, full coyo stacked heels, those quality elements. So these are shoes that you can really wear a lifetime. So that was a project that I launched right after COVID, and I was amazed to see the reaction. It was really, and they were too, because they really don't make a lot of women's shoes. So for them, it was something completely new, and the factory was thrilled too.
You are so beautiful watching your face light up as you're telling the story of your products, because you've really made your products become human. You know, you've shared this story through the product because they are, there's so much love and passion on all sides that goes into them. And I think this is, you know, something that's been a big talk at the moment right now with regards to sustainability. And sometimes, you know, that word is thrown out a lot. But I think, you know, with your brand, you've made such a conscious effort to pull in, you know, the right people, the right materials, so that we can purchase something from ODP and feel that we are contributing to your messaging, but also that we can add it to our collection and use it season after season. And just even these earrings here that I'm wearing, and I'm so, are you wearing yours, see? These are the same earrings.
Yes, I just have the top part, though.
I love telling the story behind these earrings, and I'm also so happy that this podcast is on video. So if you're listening to this on Spotify, come over to our Instagram or to our website and check out this video. These earrings are phenomenal. But you can wear this earring, is it like 9 ways?
Oh gosh, so if it's 6 pieces, and you can even wear, I see you're wearing it just with a bottom piece or with a top piece. So you can also add, there's another element you can add, which you can put in the middle, which makes it a really bold statement. So yes, I think 9 ways or maybe even 12.
I'm gonna play with it and double check. So, you know, even these little leather pieces. So tell me a little bit more about these.
So the earrings, or I had a vintage pair of earrings that I loved because you could wear them so many different ways. And when I travel, a lot of also the ideas for things come when I travel, like what are those core pieces when I travel that I can really wear in a lot of different ways. So the earrings, you can wear just the top piece alone for everyday look. So I have them, by themselves. Or they're the leather discs, which you can add, and I include six colors, so red and black and a tan, and you can really mix those up according to your outfit, making a little more statement with a color. And those are offcuts from our leather production. So at the end, I always ask the factories to hold on to all the pieces. So they say, oh, but it's usually just pieces that fall on the floor, and I say, no, those pieces I'm going to use too.
Oh, wow.
And we cut those into those discs. So those are the signature colors of our collection, and it's vegetable tanned leather. And you can add those to the earrings to kind of make a statement. And I'm launching, you can kind of see it on some of the photos on Instagram now, but Wednesday we will be launching also the necklace.
Oh, no way.
So yeah. So there's going to be a necklace that goes
with
it.
Oh, I can't wait. I'm always checking out your newsletters that come through because I'm actually saving up for my next bag. And I think this is something that we all need to consider, you know, holding off for a moment to purchase those quick buys that we want to, because going sustainable, we know it is the more expensive route. You know, it is something that we have to consciously from a consumer standpoint, decide what it is that we want to put our money towards. And my bag that I have of yours that now I probably wear it almost every single day. And you said something the other day, I see it in all your photos. And I'm like, yes, I literally wear it every single day. And it is a bag that I feel so proud when I get compliments on it because people are commenting all the time because it's the most functional bag. It's a crossbody and it has, you know, a sustainable water bottle that sits within it. I can put my phone and I can clip my keys onto it. And as a mom and running around London, it is the most functional bag that I've ever owned. But I now think, you know, this is how I don't want to go and fast buy. I don't want to find something that's a quick fix that I know it's going to, you know, lose its shape or break within the year. You know, I want to be able to now sustainably purchase items and add them to my collection so that I can have them for years to come. And I feel, you know, you've done this so well with the quality that you're using in each piece that they seem to me to be lasting so long.
Well, thank you. Now, I do always notice that even on other people that I know or follow, I can always see that they have this strap. I can even notice from the strap that people are still wearing it. And to me, that means the most when I see people are wearing it and using it day after day. That makes me so happy. And yes, it is. You're right. Sometimes it is maybe a little more expensive option. I get a lot of comments from customers. Actually, I've become friends with some of my customers because they ask questions, and I'm so happy that they do because I think that they enjoy also learning about the product and maybe why they're so expensive. I mean, the obviously being made in Italy. The materials used, we use mostly vegetable tan leather or chrome-free leather because it's free of the use of chromes and the tannins, so it contributes to less toxic waste. And also, even if you think about it, when you're touching your bag so much, the toxic elements in those tannins is just crazy when you think about it, that it's so many bad elements that could be in contributing to the leather. So we try to as much as possible use vegetable tannins, and sometimes for certain softer leathers we go with chrome free tanning. But yes, so the bottle bag definitely for us was it was part of the collaboration we did with Arizona Muse, and that was something that really just came from what I was missing in my wardrobe because I would forget to carry my bottle bag my bottle with me. So Arizona said, you need to design something so you don't forget to take it with you. And so that's how it came about.
It's great. So. And you did, tell us a little bit more about the collaboration you did with Arizona, because if our listeners, you know, here are tuning in and they don't know who Arizona Muse is, she is an environmentalist, a model, and just a champion of saving the planet and the earth. She is good cop, bad cop. She's a fantastic friend to have because she really asks the questions that we need to be asking, and she gives some fantastic advice. So you two joined forces on a line that you designed together. Can you tell us a little bit more about how that even came about?
So I had met Arizona actually through email, and she had commented on how rich the colors were of the vegetable tanning that we used. And so I was telling her a little bit more about the tannery, and she was asking, as she does, lots of questions. And so it started to get my mind running about, okay, well, where not only the tanning, but where are the skins coming from? Is it possible to find skins that only come from, let's say, organic farms? And so I started in turn asking my tanneries about these, about the skins and the sourcing of the skins. And then I was in London, and we went to, she took me to see the Sustainable Angle that she sits on the board of. And the Sustainable Angle puts together a fair every year presenting sustainable materials to people in the fashion industry that are sourcing. So it's it took place before COVID. Now it's starting to take place again, but in January. And I went to see the leathers and the materials that they had, and Arizona suggested, let's do a collaboration. And we were so close to Fashion Week. She said, I don't really want to present it as a sustainable, myself as a sustainable brand. She said, no, we just need to show that you can take steps in the right direction, making small changes. And that was really an eye-opener for me, because I think Arizona also has said many times, we don't need many people doing we don't need few people doing everything right. We just need everyone taking the steps in the right direction, because a lot of people, especially in fashion brands, are overwhelmed about how can we become a sustainable brand, because they think they need to do everything sustainable. And I don't call myself a sustainable brand because I know there's a lot of things that we can still improve on. However, we're taking the steps in that right direction. And that's what Arizona taught me. It's that, okay, for right now, we can change and only use vegetable tan leather. We stopped using exotics that we weren't certain of the tanning methods. We moved our microfiber lining to recycled polyester lining. So already making these changes, we changed all our packaging to recycled, only recycled paper, and then removing plastic. That was another thing that I was getting horrified at the factories that would always put plastic and wrap everything up in plastic. And so we really got after them that they needed to stop doing that. And we said paper is fine, and gave them paper to use so that they could use paper. So it's those little steps that we can take that really can make a bigger difference in the end, rather than everyone trying to do everything perfectly. We all just need to take steps in the right direction where we can.
They are big steps that your brand has made, you know, definitely. And they are inspiring steps for all of us. And, you know, me as a consumer of your product, they are things that we are seeing and watching. And it's aspirational. It's something that, you know, we want to now make changes in our own life because of those choices and decisions and conversations that, you know, we're having. So I love being able to sit at this table. I love that Arizona paired us together, you know, two American ladies across the pond, just, you know, trying to push forward with our passion and our messaging. So I love that, you know, we're here today. I want to take this conversation a little bit deeper, Allison, and because you are an entrepreneur, and a lot of our listeners in this podcast are either entrepreneurs themselves or they're looking to take that leap into this next realm and this next stage, which can feel very daunting, right? Through many moments of our career, and now, you know, through the past and also through the future, there's a lot of unknowns as an entrepreneur. Can you share with us a moment that maybe you can register in your mind and remember that it was almost a pivot point for your brand, that maybe you were designing something or you were working so hard towards something and you had to stop, pivot, and make a change? And how did you acknowledge that, and how did you get through that pivot?
I think definitely there are two pivot points for me. One was when Barney's went bankrupt and left me with a huge financial burden because they didn't, unfortunately, pay for seasons.
And that's hard for a small brand.
Extremely hard, because in order to work with them, I had to give them exclusivity. So it meant that I couldn't grow in a certain way and I was really relying on them. Sure. And in hindsight, you know, whether or not it was a good decision, but good business decision, it, you know, and on the one hand, it did give visibility. So you really can't say one way or another. But for me, it was just, okay, where do I want the brand to be? Because it was one thing trying to be in so many retail doors and creating sample collection after sample collection and going and presenting it in Paris and during Fashion Week in Milan. Did I want to make really special products and maybe limit the production on them? My strength, I guess, I had this whole brainstorming and epiphany moment where I realized that my strength is that I'm here in Italy. So I have proximity to the factories. I can launch something on a quick turnaround. I can manage special orders of products. Those are the things that I can actually do that maybe other designers can't do because they're further from their development and from their factories. So that was a really, really big turning point for me because it was a hard moment. And okay, am I going to be able to keep the brand going? But really looking at it and saying, okay, yes, I can. I have to change my perspective of the brand, and maybe I'm not going to be in every department store and on everybody's radar. But we had really, it also taught me to build our clientele and our newsletter base, our direct to consumer, and then ironically we went into COVID, and I was already sort of prepared for that. So had I not had that hard experience of Barney's, I probably wouldn't have beefed up my e-commerce and prepared myself in that way. And so going into COVID, we were actually structured well to be able to sell direct, and we had a strong customer base that was interested in new products and drops. Sure. That we did every couple of months.
It brought you back to your messaging and to your original intention, I feel, it seems.
Exactly. It's exactly what I had imagined the brand from the beginning. I just got rolled into the whole, I guess, fashion industry and how you need to present new every season, which really it's seasons are four seasons a year now. So it was going from only presenting twice to having to present four times. And then the other turning point for me, which I learned this from Amber Vinsbox, I went to Southern Methodist University for grad school. Amber is an entrepreneur. She's an amazing woman, has, I think, four kids now. She's based in Dallas and runs Reward Style. So I've gotten to know Amber through Instagram, and being a Texas girl like me, I love following her. And she said one time, don't hire... stop hiring people, many, many people that are maybe underqualified. Hire one person who is overqualified because they will make the difference. And that's what I did this past year in hiring somebody who I took a leap saying, okay, I really need somebody in this moment. I started doing some consulting again, and I really needed somebody to help me manage all of these new collaborations we have. And that was really a turning point for me because I realized had I done that maybe a little bit before, I could have taken the brand in a different direction and maybe also even having that person to talk with and get feedback from, because the other part about being an entrepreneur is sometimes you're on your own. And I always am envious of people who have those partners with them, because my husband's great as a as my marital partner, but not maybe as a business partner. He's not from the fashion industry, but I always think that having that person that you really can rely on is fundamental. So that was another turning point when I took that leap. When I found somebody that was really exactly what I wanted, and I said, okay, yes, I have to take this step and find a way to hire her because she's who I need right now. So that was another pivot point.
That's so exciting. That's great to hear. Because I think, you know, a lot of our listeners and, you know, viewers themselves, we're constantly all pivoting every day in our life, right? There's change, there's movement, it's happening, but it's kind of how you can grab a hold of that change, hold on tight, and reshift the mental attitude around that. You know, I think the outcome tends to be a lot more successful when we are, you know, infusing positivity and also collaboration with other individuals who are in there too, you know, just wanting to create a solution and something that, you know, continues that inspiration forward. Allison, tell us, do you have any new products or new lines coming out soon that you can share that's not top secret?
Well, okay. I already gave the news about the necklace that we were launching. Yes. And then we just launched our saddle pouches, which are made with chrome-free leather. We needed a really soft, like Napa leather. And also, again, we wanted something at a great price point, made in Italy, because it's also around Christmas time, so maybe gifting. So we have the saddle pouches, which are inspired by sort of those little pouches you see. I'm from Texas, so you see on Western gear kind of attached to saddles. So we have those. We just launched our Texani boots. So we have the boots. We have maybe one more thing coming up for the holidays. I'm hoping that it will be ready in time again. And that's another thing where I realize working with these artisans, sometimes if it works out and the timing is okay, great. Otherwise, we're not really pushing for a fashion week calendar. So we will have it when it is ready. So,
well, the saddle pouch is my saver upper. So I am super excited. I have been eyeing these, and an Arizona girl myself, anything Southwestern or that has that vibe to it, I'm all about it. So yeah, I'm excited. Allison, to wrap this up, if you could just share with our listeners one piece of advice that either you've received from somebody or that you are continuously, you know, giving to yourself to move forward through your entrepreneurship journey, that would be great.
Oh gosh, I have a lot of advice. I guess the big one is do what you love. I think that makes a huge difference. But the other thing is always remember that you sometimes can't do it all. I think especially for an entrepreneur, sometimes, the time you have is limited. And at the end of the day, if you just can't maybe do it all, focus on what is going to make the biggest difference and remember that you did your best. Because sometimes maybe I don't get to the bottom of my mega checklist of everything that I need to do, but I feel like, okay, I conquered the most important things and I at least got to spend some time with friends and my husband and my dogs. And at the end of the day, that's what counts. So prioritize always. And if you can't get to everything, then that's going to be okay.
I couldn't agree more. And I think, Allison, you should be so proud of your brand from this idea and this inspiration to now looking, you know, back on the journey that you've been on and the collection that you now have and the amazing people that you are inspiring and empowering around the world. Thank you so much for sharing your story and being so open and honest on the Una Series podcast.
Well, thank you, Katie. I'm so excited to share, and you are inspiring as well. So it's been really wonderful being able to see your journey with Una, and can't wait to see where it goes next.
Thank you so, so much. Unas, thank you for tuning in. Stay tuned for some other incredible founder podcasts episodes that we have coming up. Until then, we hope to see you live on our on-demand or our live sessions. Look forward to seeing you soon. Bye.